First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Double dip for you this weekend. We had Chris Russo on in another podcast, and now is the follow-up podcast, which I think the demise of the Mike and the Mad Dog era does deserve. We had to have my buddy Jacko, the world's most famous Yankee fan, or at least in the top 1,000, and also a huge Mike and the Mad Dog fan, as we've discussed many times on this podcast on the BS Report. So we're going to have him in to talk about the Yanks, Mike and the Mad Dog, the Olympics, all the stuff you'd want to hear. Let's call him at work right now.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny.
Wow, that was an extended Johnny.
Hey, you're 67 and 60.
Yeah, I'll tell you. $209 million worth every penny.
I don't even need to ask if you're worried yet.
Oh, I'm beyond worried. I'm already starting to worry about the 2009 season.
So, I mean, you're not even on the scale right now.
Oh, God, no.
You won't even step on the scale.
Oh, my God. This is freaking, are you kidding me? This season's in a casket that's been nailed shut. No, there's no more worry. There's no need to worry any further.
You're done.
Off the plane, sir. Done. Off the train.
Tough summer for you. First, the Yanks fall apart. The U.S. track and field team, which I know you were terribly attached to, they fell apart.
Tyson Gay, troubling.
I know the relay has always been one of your favorite events. See that the baton fall on the ground like that twice in one night. And then the third thing, the dramatic divorce of Mike and the Mad Dog, which I know has sent you into a drinking, growing a beard type tailspin. Are you okay? First of all, you're okay.
It was last Friday. Was pretty emotional.
Really?
I'm kidding around, but it really was kind of emotional.
It was. I just, you know, you're following the Mad Dog as we speak. We just had him on.
And, oh, wow.
He was saying it was, you know, one of the most emotional days of his life, obviously.
I went out lunchtime, and the Mad Dog's father called in at one point and, like, was breaking down into tears. And Francesca was like, Tony, you're killing me. I need this like a hole in the head. It's going to be tough. This is a tough show to get through. But then I read online that Mad Dog called in after that himself.
He actually called in before that.
It wasn't before that. Maybe I was out of the car or something. But I think he called in after his father.
Yeah, you might be right.
And was like sobbing or something on the phone. I really want to YouTube that. I don't know if it's on YouTube from the YES Network, but I'm fascinated to see that. Because it would give me the closure that I think that I need.
I actually... I thought Mike did a little acting, I think, when the dog broke down.
Really?
But when the dog's dad broke down, he almost lost it.
Yeah, that's 20 years together. I was thinking about it. That's like as long as you and I have known each other. If you did that, you know.
Yeah, it is true.
We worked together every day for 20 years. You know, like it's a lot when you're not going to see each other on a regular basis anymore. You know.
We could kind of see the breakup coming, but at the same time. It was still so abrupt. It was just kind of like, it was jarring. It's like finding out like your parents are getting divorced or something.
The rumors were that they were, you know, at least Mad Dog went on and said like they were working out their differences and he was still under contract and nothing was going to happen. And, you know, Francesca kind of told a different story, but that's at least what Mad Dog said. So you assume that that was what was going to, you know, they would rectify things. There was too much money at stake and what have you, so.
Yeah, Mike, I don't mean to kill myself here, but I think I need a change of scenery. Hey, Doug, you do what you need to do, Doug.
And Francesca said that he would never work with another. I will never work with another partner. I always said that.
Ever. I am celibate as a radio host. It was interesting, though. He just said, because when we listened to him in the 90s, it was obvious those guys were friends, too.
Yeah.
And they would be like, Doug, when you called me during that tennis match last night, and, you know, they had a relationship beyond just
right.
the 5 hours of the show. And it was clear the last few years that was changing. And he even admitted, like, the last couple of years, like, you know, they just weren't the same type of friends.
How does that happen? Like, you just grow apart? Did they have, like, their own entourages that were, like, in their corner saying, you don't need Mad Dog, you're bigger than him, or the, vice versa, you know?
It's kind of like when we grew apart from the Blue Boy when he downed our Milwaukee trip to Lambeau Field and said that he would have gone if we had went hiking.
I'm glad these are played on a tape delay, because I'm going to go see him tonight. So,
Oh, no.
It would have been awkward. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been awkward.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
I think things change over the years. You know,
you grow
Johnny.
Apart. Things, right. Your families and, you know, new friends. It's hard, right? It's
difficult. You and I stayed close only because, you know, we shared a room together. And we saw some things from each other that we couldn't unsee. Smelled odors that we couldn't unsmell. And those things just kind of bond two human beings.
Sears one into your brain. That's true. Yeah.
It's funny though. One of my favorite memories with you was the time, and I've told this story before, but whatever. The time we drove to the Jersey Shore and listened to Mike and the Mad Dog for the entire 5-hour show, and then
it's true.
And then we talked like them for the entire weekend, and obviously neither of us hooked up, but
shocking.
But it was you know, it was really the only radio show I've ever heard that I could listen to for more than an hour. Like, I really plug out the whole 5 hours. I was fine with it. Enjoyed every hour the same.
Definitely, yeah. That's the thing. Like, I'm not, like, a huge, like, really radio guy and, like, you know, radio personalities and all. And I always think it's, like, so forced and everything. But those guys just, I don't know. It was like hanging out in a bar, like, listening to these two guys talk. And yeah. As you and I have said repeatedly in the past, like, some of the funnier things they ever did and the most entertaining were non-sports related, like talking about movies, like, hey, Oliver Stone, how about doing a romantic comedy? You know, like stuff like that.
Right.
Like, I mean, I remember when I was in college and I was working for Connecticut Natural Gas at summer jobs, and guys there were talking about Mike the Mad Dog and got me into it. So I listened one day. And at the time, the Yankees had this pitching phenom, Sam Militello, who never quite worked out, kind of yeah. Phil Hughes or Ian Kennedy of his day. And he was on with the Mad Dog. I think Francisco was on vacation, but the Mad Dog was on. And Mad Dog goes, Sam, this is the early days of listening. He's like, Sam, you have poster boy good looks, but half the women in the station here are in love with you. Let me ask you something. Are you married? And Sam Militello is like, no, dog, I'm single. And he goes, there's like a 5-second pause, and he goes, good job by you. I was like, what? Good job by you. Like, it was, so that became, like, you know, you yeah. think back, like, you can't even think of a time before you and I were saying, like, that guy is killing me, or good job by him, you know, like, that we
yeah.
got that completely from Mike and the Mad Dog, you know?
Yeah, I don't mean to kill him right here, but I gotta kill him, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot of, like, weird double negatives and stuff for them. They're arguably two of the most fun people just to imitate.
Yeah, definitely. Right.
Hopefully you and I will move into that group someday.
Let's hope. Right.
But yeah, it was, you know, it is a weird thing. I was back in New York this week, and you know, it's just weird that they weren't on. Everybody was talking about it, and
well, that show on Friday when I listened to a little bit of it, you know, during my lunch when I was out and about, and people were calling in. It was like a wake.
Yeah.
Like, people were like, you know, I can't believe it. You know, like, I grew up listening to you from the time I was 10, and it's never going to be the same again. And people were, like, breaking down and crying. And it's like, you know, neither one of them is dead, thankfully. They're just not going to be on the air anymore, you know? Like, it's really crazy. It's just a sports radio show. It's you guys
I wanted,
sports, you know?
At the end, I wanted Mike to say, I'd like to thank all the callers who called in. Vinny, Sal, Mario. Just go through every stereotypical New York name.
Exactly.
But it was like that for like 4 hours. But yeah, it's definitely a void. And I think, you know, we were joking about it. I called you this week. We were joking about, you know, we were arguing about whether Mike was a little too full of himself with the final show, and it kind of made it seem like the Beatles were breaking up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I think he had a right to be proud of the place that they held in New York. You know.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they were
like,
it.
You know, they're part of the background of the city, or he had some phrase for it, how they become like part of the lexicon of the city in sports. Mm. And I mean, it's really true. I mean, you know, I have some back when the Yankees were good and they won World Series, and I have like their, you know, VHS tapes at the time. I think it was pre-DVD. You know, like the highlight films that they come out with after the World Series, and every one of them has like clips from Mike and the Mad Dog, like talking about the ALCS or the World Series. I mean, they really are like the go-to sports radio guys for big New York sports events, you know, or were.
So what happens to you now? The Yankees are done.
Mm.
Do you just root against the Red Sox now?
Like, oh, God, yeah.
I'm sure you're excited about the Clay Buchholz basically pulling a Section 8.
I'm hugely excited about that, because I was dreading the fact that, you know, Clay Buchholz throws a no-hitter last year. The Red Sox already had a stacked rotation, and everybody's like, now they have Kid Buchholz, you know? And so you're like, oh, God, here we go. They picked this other kid out of the woodwork. He's going to be great. But now I'm very happy that he's blown up. Very happy.
And
is
Beth
stealing computers yet, or is it about a week away from that?
Oh, Johnny. When you're in pain, you just start lashing out.
I really do. It's the way I react. My defense mechanism.
Well, they really might have destroyed his career because I had the conversation with Hench like 5 weeks ago about whether we were reaching the point where they were killing this guy's confidence permanently, and then he lost like another five games.
Yeah, oh, I think I'm going to make this prediction. He will never be a big-time major league pitcher after this. You can't. It's never happened where a guy's like phenomenal guy, then they put him right into the heat of battle, and he stinks up the joint for months, and they not only do they demote him to AAA, they send him all the way down to AA. You can't tell me that guy's going to be like, oh, I'll be bouncing back. I feel good now. You know, no way. He's done. Shot.
Do your thing about his girlfriend's stats.
Well, I read in, I guess it was in spring training, where he's dating some woman who was the penthouse pet of the year, one of these more recent years. And they had some quote from his father, and his father was like, yeah, last year he dated a Victoria's Secret model, and this year he's dating the penthouse pet of the year from, you know, 2007 or whatever. Mm. So his father's like, yeah, he's moving up the ladder. He upgraded or something like that. So now that he's been sent back to AA, I was joking with some friends of mine, and I'm like, next year at spring training, he's going to be dating like a chick that's the model for the Walmart circular in the newspaper. Somebody from like the Kmart catalog.
The Portland Sea Dogs prom princess.
Exactly.
Poor Clay.
Miss Portland, Maine, you know, like it's because you talk about sliding down. And when he calls the penthouse pet and he's like, I know you're going to meet me in New York for that Boston, that Red Sox Yankee series next week, but it turns out I'm in Portland playing the Nashua Pride, you know, the New Britain Rockcats, Portland Sea Dogs. Any interest in coming up for that one?
Any interest in meeting me in upstate New York for a weekend?
She's like,
in Schenectady?
Jeez, Clay, everything's going great, but I've got some questions.
I think she actually probably stopped returning his calls and deleted his emails for like 2 weeks and then claimed she was out of town.
He's blocked from her cell phone, yeah.
It's weird what's happened with the American League because the Red Sox or the Yankees, whatever. And meanwhile, the Angels have turned into the juggernaut that each of us thought our team was going to be.
I know. I mean, I was thinking about it today, and if the Red Sox, who am I kidding? They're going to make the playoffs and probably win the World Series. But
you're
I can delude myself into thinking they're not going to make the playoffs. And I'm like, if you're Major League Baseball on Fox and your AL, your American League playoffs are, you know, Devil Rays, or not the Devil Rays, they're not the Devil Rays anymore, they're the Rays, the Tampa Bay Rays, the Angels, the White Sox, and the Twins. You're like, oh, my God. I mean, is there any compelling matchup or, like, storyline there?
See, I think people would get into the Rays because of the whole young frisky thing and weird stadium and, like, all the bandwagon fans and the history. But if it's an Anaheim-Minnesota final, that is – oh, no, a White Sox-Minnesota final would be worse.
Well, at least you have Chicago, and then if the Cubs are still around and you have like a – you know, you could have a Chicago World Series, people might be hyped up about that.
I'm still not totally, totally sold on the Angels as much as everybody else. I know everybody thinks they're a juggernaut, but they still don't have a lot of guys that like work the pitch count, and they have a lot of like fairly low OBP guys for – for their big bombers, and don't totally trust their setup guys. Like, they almost seem like they're a better regular season than they'd be in the playoffs. Like, I look at Tampa. If Tampa could just somehow get into the playoffs with that bullpen that they have, and
right.
I'm throwing out Percival. He'll probably be hurt. But
yeah.
They even having guys like Howell and Balfour to come in, and they're throwing like 99 or whatever. Like, they're really the only team that has that other than Minnesota.
Yeah.
Minnesota's got Nathan, I guess.
I mean, the Red Sox will probably be the wild card, and until I see the Angels beat the Red Sox in any big situation in the playoffs, then I'm not going to believe it's going to happen. I mean, I can just see it happening. The Red Sox stumble to the finish line and make the wild card, and then, you know, Beckett comes back to the Beckett of old, and you still have Lester and Dice K, and, you know, the Angels are so used to choking that they just do it one more time for old time's sake. I could completely see that happening.
If we can get into the playoffs, the one thing that has happened this year that's been significant was that Lester has emerged into this stopper.
Huge.
It's like, you know, we'll lose three in a row, and he's pitching, and I feel like we're going to win. Like, he's going to stop it, which I think you always hear the word stopper, but until somebody gets to that point, they're not a stopper. You're like, oh my God, thank right. God this guy's pitching tonight. He's going to stop what's happening. So if they can get Beckett back, then all of a sudden those are two pretty good guys to have in a playoff series.
And this is the worst case scenario for me and my well-being, but imagine if they do make the playoffs and they beat the Angels and you somehow end up with a Red Sox Rays ALCS with all the bad blood between those two teams. How huge would that be? That would actually be compelling because those two teams really have a lot of dislike.
Yeah, it's almost like a Crips Bloods thing at this point. It goes back so far, like nobody even knows how it started.
Yeah, it goes like Pedro. And
it goes before Pedro. It was like mid-90s.
Wasn't it like Gerald Ice Williams when he was a former Yankee? Didn't he get into some ugliness with the Red Sox? That might have been with Pedro, though. Maybe it's before that.
Yeah, that happened. The Pedro thing was 99 or 00.
Yeah.
But I feel like something happened the year before. But we had one year where I remember they just kept throwing a Daw back over and over and over again. And then finally the Red Sox just came out of the dugout. You know, it was like none of the pitches even hit him. But I do worry, like, and I said this before, like when we had the fight with them or during the NBA Finals this year and six of their guys were beating the hell out of Coco Crisp while everybody else was kind of watching and hoping he didn't get hurt. Like, that worries me for the playoffs.
Yeah, they have the swagger.
Maybe the Canadian Jason Bay will give them that muscle that they need.
A little hockey mentality.
Yeah, the Canadians will throw down.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because Ortiz doesn't want to get hurt.
No.
I guess Yukos would be the only conceivably crazy guy, but Jabba Chamberlain threw him over and over and over again. And by the way, karmically, it came back on him.
Well, it hurt his shoulder, yeah.
So you think you're out?
Oh, God, yeah, done completely.
How many games back are you from wildcard?
Six. Six and a half, maybe.
Can never rule out the Yanks.
This just too many injuries. I know that's an easy excuse, but I mean they really were decimated by injuries. And the amazing thing to me is I heard the other day that Cheng Ming Wong is still like in a walking cast. I mean, and he's like on crutches. Joe Theismann wasn't in a walking cast for this long after Lawrence Taylor snapped his leg in half.
It was like a Hummer ran over his foot.
Cheng Ming Wong was running from third base to home, and he's like still, you know, a complete cast and crutches. I mean, what? Are you kidding me?
How much Olympics have you been watching?
Well, here and there, a little bit, flipping around. The problem is it's 12 hours ahead of us, so you know everything that happened. It's not a lot of drama, you know?
Yeah, but at least you're getting some stuff live. On the West Coast, we get nothing.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. If you're up late enough, they do run, like, you know, you see some live preliminaries or whatever.
You didn't get into the whole Michael Phelps thing?
Oh, I did. I mean, he was amazing. But, you know, you always knew he was going to win, so you couldn't really watch. There's a lot of drama. I mean, guy's freaking amazing. He's like half dolphin. It's incredible. Some of these sports they have, though, we were talking about this yesterday at work. I was flipping the other night, and there's a thing on called trampoline, where these, like, little youngish women are like gymnasts and they like jump around on a trampoline. And first of all, I don't know where they get the commentators for this. I think it was the regular gymnastic commentators, but I'm sorry, jumping on a trampoline while you get judged on it, that may be many things, but a sport is not one of them. That is not a freaking sport. It's just not. I apologize to all the trampoline aficionados that are listening right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll forward the angry emails from the Trampoline Society of America, but let me tell you, that is not a sport. It's just not.
In like 3 days, you're going to have to apologize to the Trampoline Society of America.
I'll extend my apologies.
Degrading their sport.
But I'm sorry. If anyone was offended, I'd like to apologize for my remarks. But I mean,
the thing I'm always I'm fascinated by how they find the analysts. Like, I'm almost, instead of the puff pieces that Mary Carrillo and Chris Collinsworth do on so-and-so, blah, blah, here's their mom, and this guy died of cancer. I'd be much more interested in the talent search to find who is going to be the color guy for last night's BMX male and female competition.
Well, yeah, that's another one. BMX, come on, don't we have the X Games for this? We don't really need that as an Olympic sport, do we?
On the other hand, did you turn the channel?
I didn't watch any of the BMX last night.
Oh, there was like five wipeouts between the two finals.
You know what sport
it was extraordinary. I loved it.
You know what sport I find intriguing is this handball. It seems like something like your gym teacher just like made up to keep you occupied for 45 minutes. Like just a ball and two nets and you kind of run around and you can dribble and you can throw it. Like I don't quite, you know, there's no kicking it, I guess, but it's just insane.
Yeah, it feels like it should be a professional sport.
Yeah, and I don't understand why we don't play that in America. Like it looks like we would be into that, you know?
Well, if handball can be a professional Olympic sport, and what was the other one you mentioned? Trampoline?
Yeah.
What was it? Why can't, first of all, why can't dodgeball be an Olympic sport? And at that point, the line has been removed. And the other thing, we used to play wall ball in college. I feel like that could have been an Olympic sport.
Definitely could have been a sport. Badminton is a sport.
By the way, if you're in college and you don't know about wall ball, you find one of the dorm halls, and what is it? Like
it's a racquetball.
Well, you get a racquetball, and it's like an 8-foot distance we had between the two walls.
Probably, yeah.
So you line up, the guys line up, you hit the ball, you have to bounce it off the floor against the wall, and then it has to bounce. If it bounces twice, the next guy in line loses. Mm. If it bounces once, and then he hits it against the wall, and it just keeps going, basically. And we played wall ball probably for 1,000 hours?
Probably our freshman year, yeah.
It was one of the contributing factors to my 2.5. But it was really like, really all you need was a racquetball. I mean, this was like a $1.99 sport. Guys had floor burns. There were arguments, near fist fights.
Yeah, it's really, it's worth the price of admission, certainly. Yeah,
it got super competitive.
Past the time, it was exciting, yeah. And when it got down to like final two guys and they were both good at it, like you'd have a lot of people, like it was a good spectator sport. People
yeah.
were into it, you know?
You could play drunk, you could play sober.
Mm.
The other sport we had was high lie, which was probably less defensible.
Yes, in a lot of ways.
High lie was just throwing a golf ball against a wall and then trying not to get hit by it.
A cement wall. That game, I believe, was never played sober.
And then also, I think we stopped playing when somebody got hit in the temple. We actually thought the guy was dead.
The entry requirement for that game was a .09 blood alcohol level.
0.09, I would have gone higher.
That's the entry level. We have maybe 0.15.
It ranged from 0.15 to 0.3. That was not a good game. Also, by the way, like probably out of the 25 most exciting moments of my life, I would say 8 of them happened in high life.
The problem was we lived on a hall that was co-ed at the time, so it was half of the hall was men, and then the other half was females. And there was a door in between, which we would throw the golf ball at an amazing rate of speed.
Right.
At 2 in the morning.
Because it was metal.
At two in the morning. And unfortunately, every once in a while, we'd be playing it, and one of the females would open the door between the hallway to tell us to cut out the noise and yell at us. And, they, you know,
yeah.
we'd have to dodge as a golf ball flew by our head at about 85 miles an hour.
Yeah, that could have been bad. It's amazing we'd get kicked off campus.
It really could have ended badly in a lot of ways.
Well, I think high lie should have been an Olympic sport.
If badminton and trampoline can be, then the hall high lie certainly could be.
And let me tell you something. You know, I'm sure anybody listening is laughing about wall ball. That sounds stupid. You try to play wall ball and see how into it everybody gets. I mean, this is something we used to do like for 3-4 hours. And I also feel like that could be an Olympic sport. You'd have like, they'd pick the lineup. Oh, the English guy is going in front of the French guy. And watch out for the Lithuanian in slot number 5. That would have been riveting.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, they're getting rid of baseball and softball. They need some other sports to fill up these Olympics, you know?
The Olympics did cause one fight with my wife and I.
During gymnastics, you said?
Yeah, during gymnastics on the Sunday night, after Alicia Sacramone had destroyed the gold medal hopes of the team with
mm-hmm.
her, she fell down a couple times. So, you know, she's in the all-around event, and they totally screw her over. They gave the Chinese gymnast, she did a terrible routine and somehow got a higher score. And so this one other girl could stop her from getting the bronze. I was actually rooting for the other girl because I thought that the combination of the previous week and then this week would be such a blow to Alicia Sacramone that it might lead to a sex tape potentially. Did not go over well, Johnny.
With Michael Phelps?
That would have been interesting, yeah.
That would have been huge.
Hey, I got to ask you something. Would you ever in a million years have your daughter become a gymnast and know that like she was going to, you know, 42 to 45 hours of practice a week plus school?
No, my God, no. It's
I don't understand why anybody would do this to their kids.
Like they have no lives whatsoever. I mean, your whole life is just like just gymnastics. Like you get up at 5 in the morning and you work out like 12 hours a day or whatever, and then you do your home, you know, go to school for a couple hours, and then you do your homework and go to bed and do the same thing all over again.
On the bright side, you don't menstruate.
Right, but you have Bella Caroli screaming at you for those 18 hours a day that you're awake, too, so that's not fun.
I don't get it, Johnny.
Injuries in the ankles and everything and the pressure, you know?
And it also seems like Or maybe the girls are predisposed to it. I don't know. But the girls are kind of smaller and stubbier. Like, it's almost like it hinders how tall they could have become.
Yeah, it's possible. Because Marilyn Britton's probably still like 4'11", right?
Carrie Strug. Yeah, I don't know if the girls are predisposed to doing it or if that's what it does to you. But
Carrie Strug's voice could only be heard by dogs, you know, when she was like 17 years old. I'm like 47 octaves too high.
Yeah, I'm a pretty competitive guy. And I just don't. You know, for like the 1 in 1,000 chance that my daughter could be a gold medal hopeful in the gymnastics over all the hours you put in.
Well, how about the Chinese?
I just don't
team.
See it.
The Chinese team, like, I mean, of course, it's a communist country. They basically take the baby out of the womb and like put him in a sports academy. But
yeah,
you know, the one girl was like, they're like, were your parents here? And she's like, I don't know. They're like, when's the last time you saw your parents? And she's like, 3 years ago. Literally.
She's like, I have parents?
Exactly.
I thought I was born out of an in vitro tube.
And then she put the gold medal in her Hello Kitty backpack, and then she went to show and tell for the fifth grade, even though she's quote-unquote 16. That's the big controversy. You know?
That was ridiculous. My theory is you can't be 16 or over if you don't have eyebrow hair.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't even have eyebrow hair, you're not 16.
And you just lost a baby tooth. That raises a few questions.
Yeah.
You know, the other jam of the Olympics is, or the chip, I think, now that I'm on a rant. I mean, Michael Phelps is amazing, and he gets the chance to win 8 gold medals. But if he's a swimmer, so he can do like the 100 meter, and he can do the butterfly, and the 200 meter, and then there's relays. But if you're like a basketball player, you only have one shot at a medal. Like, that's it. You don't have like a 3-point contest. You don't have like a slam dunk contest. You don't have like 1-on-1. It's all just like one basketball tournament for 2 weeks.
Who can have the most kids?
Too. But I mean, you can only, you know, or whatever, pick some other event like weightlifting, you know.
I agree with you. I thought the same thing. I think, like, you know, they made such a big deal about the U.S. team. They didn't win the gold. And it's like, meanwhile, they have 40 individual events coming up. Like, you can't tell me it was that big of a deal.
Like a gymnastics, they do it in each individual thing. Like, you win one for the balance beam or the vault or whatever it is, you know. Like,
yeah.
You get another shot, you know.
You know what I liked was, I liked the gymnastics guy. Who is
Tim Daggett?
Tim Daggett, the master of the complete overstatement. That is a catastrophe. He described everything like it was the Hindenburg exploding.
Yeah.
His beat is over. That is it.
Gymnastics and ice skating, the commentators seem to be a little over the top, you know, a little much. Like everything is like either the greatest thing ever, like, and how courageous, or everything is like the end of the world. It's everyone's going to move on. It's going to be okay, you know?
I am constantly amazed by how poor the commentators are. And I guess it just comes down to, like, they must look at the roster of events and say, all right, well, we have to have a trampoline guy. So who's won the trampoline in the last 8 years? And then they call, like, and they audition them, and whoever, like, the least worst one is.
You know what the amazing thing for me was? I was flipping around one day, and badminton was on. That was, like, day one of the Olympics or day two.
I watched a little badminton.
And I watched a little badminton, and then whoever the guy was, whoever the commentator was, the play-by-play guy, he goes, "We're coming to you live from NBC's broadcast center in New York." NBC's like, "We're not paying to send the badminton guy to Beijing." Like, they're going to watch it from New York and, like, just talk over the video. That's what they did. So it's like you couldn't be like, "Wow, this crowd is really into this match," because they don't know what the crowd was like. They're not
back
there.
To your whole sports thing. Like, how does badminton become a sport, but croquet is not?
Yeah, it's the same. You play them both at a picnic.
And plus, croquet would be a lot more enjoyable, I think, to watch.
What's that game? Jarts, you know?
Yeah, billiards. I think should have been in.
Bocce.
If ping pong's in, why isn't billiards in?
Yeah, table tennis. That's another one. That's not an Olympic sport.
And if you're going to have beach volleyball and volleyball, then I think you have billiards and then you have bar billiards where the tables are cramped and everybody's smoking and there's drinks on the table that you might knock over.
Yeah, beach volleyball is a sport that the U.S. is like, this is some sport that only we can win, so we have to demand it has to be in the Olympics.
It is. I mean, honestly, all due respect to slam ball, which I actually enjoy, but it's like having slam ball as an Olympic event.
Yeah.
It's like this gimmick event. Meanwhile, I actually thought they had eliminated the real volleyball until I saw it this week. I was worried, but I just can't believe that's a sport. Beach volleyball.
Yeah, I know. That's a joke. It's a joke. They tried to get, like, a couple of years ago, I think they tried to get all these extreme sports in there because it would appeal to the kids, you know, I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
It's a joke.
I want to know why how they play beach volleyball without having any accidents, if you get my drift. Because these girls wear, basically, they wear very strong underpants.
Yeah.
Very skimpy.
But my friends and I were talking about this, and this is going to cast me in a bad light in terms of my man credibility, but we were like, it's all well and good that they wear these bikinis, but, I mean, is that really necessary? Like, couldn't they play, like, in shorts and a T-shirt?
Maybe that's part of it. They're trying to boost up the sex appeal. But if you're boosting up the sex appeal, you know, boost up the sex appeal.
You could get some.
But after watching it for 2 weeks, I became convinced that if there's ever – I know everybody got excited about Gabrielle Reese, but really, like, you know, she was fine. She was sports cute, but not, like, overwhelmingly hot. Like, if they ever landed, like, a Kournikova type for beach volleyball –
oh.
It would be all over.
That'd be it.
She would be the most famous female athlete who ever existed.
Yeah, and it would pass hockey for the fourth sport.
They'd be like, they'd have the Olympics on like the Sunday night. And now let's go to 3 straight hours of the first round of women's volleyball.
Right.
Women's beach volleyball. But, I mean, at some point that will happen. This girl, whoever that girl is, will become the tiger of female athletes.
Definitely. That's absolutely right. Hopefully she's out there right now training for London in 2012.
God, let's hope. Let's hope it's not my daughter.
Let's hope for that too, yes.
All right, last thing. It was really an emotional summer for you, as we mentioned before.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention the two Corys.
Right. It was a rough one at the end. They parted not as friends, right? I missed the last minute of the last show because, as pathetic as I am, I DVR'd it because I was watching Mad Men at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it and my DVR cut off the last minute of the season.
Well, if you think that's pathetic, I'm going to tap you, my friend. Because when I taped the two Corys, I'd go the extra, like, 3 button presses and make sure it tapes an extra 5 minutes. Just to make sure I don't miss anything, any credits or anything. Yeah, and basically it was just, a strung-out Haim on that cliff.
Yeah, that was it. I didn't miss
being
anything.
Disappointed that Feldman didn't come. They kind of intimated Feldman was driving over, but not really. By the way, I think he's perfected the stare in front of a mirror with both hands on the counter and look intently at himself move after he's gotten all ready.
As
nobody's
said,
ever done that better.
When he got the final phone call from Haim saying, dude or kid, I'm going to be up on the hill, you know where I live, if you want to come see me, you said it was his finest acting ever, and that was no joke. Like, he was Brando-esque. He was like De Niro. They focused in on his eyes, and he had this intense look in his eyes. And then he turned to the camera and said, did you guys get that?
I watched that last episode. I thought, you know what, Feldman can act.
Yeah.
That guy could at least be like the third lead in some bad cable movie at this point of his life.
Yeah, definitely.
Haim? No.
Some problems. I heard I read on the other day that he's in a movie now, though. He's filming a movie in Toronto with Vivica A. Fox.
Really?
I'm sure it's straight to video, but I was just so impressed that the Haim has a job.
Did we ever talk about the Valentine's Day episode?
I don't think we did.
That was unbelievable. I urge everybody to YouTube, Corey Feldman, Valentine's Day. You will not be disappointed. It will be one of the best 2 minutes you've ever had in your life.
That was so great. I got a bunch of my friends into watching it, and they sat wrapped. We got it on demand because I was talking about out in Vegas, we started watching this show, and then when the Valentine's Day one was on, I said, you guys have to watch this. And we put it on demand, and they couldn't even believe it. It's like, it's inexplicable how good that was.
You know, the thing that stands out for me with that show and with Feldman is like, I think we hit a point. I think the Osbournes were the tipping point where with unintentional comedy, all of a sudden it was people were trying to play in the unintentional comedy. Everybody was in on the joke, and you really couldn't find it anymore.
Right.
Like even with the NBA draft, which used to be one of the funniest ongoing sporting events that anybody had.
Right.
Even they wised up for it, and they started wearing like, you know, more sophisticated suits and not bringing like the 40 posse members. And but Corey Feldman is like the last guy who never got the memo.
Well, that's
he really is. He is the last human being in America.
When I was watching it with my friends, that's what I said. I said, this is what you have to understand is he doesn't think that he's doing this to be funny. He really is serious about this.
Yeah.
Like, he really is into this. Like, he really thinks this is making, like, a statement of his love for his wife. Like, this isn't a joke for him. Like, he believes it, which makes it 100,000 times funnier, you know? He's not in on the joke.
As I showed the clip to really every friend I have in L.A., one of them made a good point about her body language in it. Susie, his wife, who really, I don't know what happened to her this year, but it was a mighty fall from a cute standpoint. But her body language, if you watch as the song goes on, first she has like her arms crossed. And by the end of it, she's just leaning back. Like, I would love to have like a body language expert, like what Us Weekly does, just break down her performance in this video. Like, as she's just becoming, I don't know whether horrified or enthralled. I don't know what adjective.
And when she was crying, was she crying because she was moved by it, or was she crying because she's like, I can't believe I'm married to this blankety blank?
That, I think it was more of a, how much longer do I have to do this?
Right, please tell me it'll be end soon.
When will he make enough money that I can divorce him and get something for myself? I got to ask you a question. Because I watched it like 20 times.
Yeah.
Actually, that's probably a lie. It's probably like 30. The song grew on me after a while.
I was hoping it was on iTunes because I would download it. I put it on my iPod.
The backup singer was pretty good.
She was, and when the strings kick in, it really is like, it's all right. They should put that thing on iTunes.
What about when Corey went into the John Lennon thing where he's like, a boop boop a doop boop a doop boo?
Yeah, when he was trying to help the guy that was helping.
I love you!
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
That was so great.
I wish, so great. Unfortunately, thanks to the internet laws, we can't play clips on the podcast.
Right, because otherwise...
Which I don't understand. There's some sort of... But I could put this clip on YouTube, and it's okay.
Yeah.
But in a podcast form, I can't. But
well,
anyway...
You've done your part. You've told everybody that's listening you have to go to YouTube and check it out if you haven't seen it already, so...
Do you like Feldman more when he has the goatee Fu Manchu thing or when he goes clean-shaven?
Goatee.
Yeah, I do, too. I feel like that should be a prerequisite from him from now on.
Yeah, definitely. So, and I like when he wears the hoodie and the sunglasses. It's really it's what he has to have the whole look.
When he looks kind of like does the Eminem look?
Yeah. The other night I went out with some friends and their 3-year-old or went to their house and their 3-year-old son was there and he was wearing a sweatshirt with a hoodie and they're the ones that I got into the two Corys. So I put my sunglasses on him and I put the hoodie on and I pretended to be Corey Haim and then he was just 3 years old and not really doing anything, but he had the sunglasses and the hoodie. So he was like Corey Feldman in that first meeting. Riotously funny. Big laughs.
Brought the house down.
It really did.
How excited are you for the island?
The island?
Yeah, the next Real World
Road Rules. Oh, the Real World Road Rules Challenge.
They're on an island.
And Survivor.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe the most blatant reality ripoff we've seen.
It really is. I'm excited. When does that start?
Pretty soon.
All right, I'm excited.
They've been running the promos.
We saw the previews when we watched the reunion show or whatever in Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, TV's about to get good again. I mean, we really had a big drought. It's really just been Mad Men and the Olympics this month.
And yes.
And that's it. Mad Men, by the way.
Oh, Mad Men is such a good show. It's scary.
The last episode, not quite as good as the first. The third episode when he sealed the deal with Bobby Barrett the old-fashioned way.
That was fantastic.
When he threatened her in a way that has never been done on television ever and will probably never be done again.
That whole episode was great with the comic and his wife. And that was a great one. That's when Don really came back because he'd been kind of emasculated.
Yeah.
And that's when you're like, Don's back now. Don's over it.
He's the best.
He's fantastic.
I'm actually going to try to have him on the podcast, I think.
Oh, my God. That would be huge. That would be awesome.
I'm just going to call him Don the whole time because I think John Hamm is Don Draper. I don't think he's even acting anymore. I think he's just become another human being.
Absolutely. It's what he is. He's that good.
Did you watch the Saget roast?
I did.
What was your grade?
What was that? What did I think?
No, what was your grade?
Oh, grade? Like a B minus.
The Anne Frank joke killed me.
That one was...
The John Lovitz just took a pounding. Like, to the point that I had to Google him to make sure, you know, that they weren't hinting at something a little larger.
Yeah. And I thought, his routine was terrible.
Yeah, he was bad. Jeff Garland's was bad.
His was bad. That thing didn't work at all. And, what's his name? Norm Macdonald, I understand what he was trying to do there, and it seemed like Saget, like, laughed, like, at some inside joke with them where he was trying to be, like, you know, old, like, Dean Martin roast jokes, like, but it just was painful to watch.
I actually emailed Jeff Ross about that because I wanted to see what happened there, and he said First of all, he said it was much funnier in person.
Okay.
And that because everyone knew what he was doing, and it just kind of became funnier and funnier and funnier.
Right.
So edited on TV didn't have the same impact, but, you know, he was – I don't know whether Comedy Central told him maybe not to be as dirty as he would have been or whatever. But so he went that route and apparently brought the house down.
Because they were all in on the joke.
I thought the most shocking thing for me was that the girl who wasn't one of the Olsen twins and wasn't the girl who ended up on 90210, but the fourth girl.
Yeah.
And they showed her in the stands, and she was, like, ridiculously attractive.
Yeah, she was at the table with Dave Coulier or whatever.
Yeah, it was some table. And my favorite part was about 45 minutes in, Stamos realized that he had just made an enormous mistake.
Just wanted to run.
So, yeah, I'll host the roast. That sounds great. I'll read the cue cards. That after, like, the 25th Jerry O'Connell joke.
Oh, yeah, the Jerry O'Connell jokes were rough. You could tell he didn't care for those. He could tell he was like, oh, God, no, that was my wife.
Greg Giraud, though, really, he's kind of taken the Jeff Ross routine about four levels further.
Yeah, he's not afraid. And I actually enjoyed Gilbert Gottfried's joke about John Stamos as well. John Stamos walks into a bar and orders a drink.
Oh, yeah.
The bartender says, we have a drink named after you, and then the punchline, which we can't repeat here.
Yeah.
That swayed me.
If I was a female, I would never be involved in a roast. Because either all the jokes are about how fat you are, how ugly you are, how many guys you've slept with.
Exactly.
It's one of those three categories, and you're going to fall into one of them.
And Susie Essman looked like she wanted to just get out of there a couple different times, the woman from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
And Jeff Garlin, same thing. It's like... He's a fat guy. You're going to sit on that dais, and they're going to tell fat jokes about you for 3 hours.
Yeah, he looked like he was a little bummed out, but yeah, that's what you have to expect.
Well, that supposedly, in that case, that's not a bad thing, because he's one of the legendary words I can't say.
Really?
Yeah.
He's not a good guy?
Supposedly.
All right, well.
A little full of himself.
Gets what he deserves, then. There you go. That's what happens.
All right, I'm going to let you go because you're at work.
All right. No, that's right, I am. That's Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, where am I?
Hey there. Oh, one last thing. I mailed you the Loose Balls book.
Yes.
And hidden in that book was a little tidbit that the St. Louis Spirits with Marvin Barnes and Moses Malone and all those people. And
Maurice Lucas, yeah.
Maurice Lucas, had they been able to get into the NBA, their plan was to move to
Hartford, Connecticut.
Your own Hartford, Connecticut.
Yeah, when they had the merger and four ABA teams came into the ABA, the Nuggets, the Spurs, the Nets, and the Pacers, and the Spirits were – there was six teams in the ABA, one of which had no money, and the four teams made it, and the fifth was the Spirits of St. Louis. And they were like – but the NBA, for some reason, didn't want to go to St. Louis, maybe because St. Louis had already failed when they were the St. Louis
right.
Braves or whatever. So they were trying to think of another town, and they offered to move to Hartford. But the Celtics protested that Hartford was in their territory.
Yeah, Red Auerbach, a man that brought a great deal of joy to your life at one point, also
yeah.
prevented really what the greatest sports-related thing that ever would happen to
him. I mean, if we could have had basketball and hockey, Hartford would be so different. I would have grown up listening to gathering around my radio to listen to Bob Costas or watching Marvin Barnes play in my Maurice Lucas jersey. It was disappointing.
I think that would have kept the name, too. I like the Hartford Spirits.
It's pretty good, the Spirits of Hartford. I could have maybe, you know, in my youth, I could have gotten, like, a Marvin Barnes autograph. Imagine that.
I think you would have been between 16 and 27% cooler had the Spirits passed through your life. Well, think about, like, having Marvin Barnes in your formative years.
Definitely.
Has a dramatic effect on you.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that book, but then I got to that on, like, page 419, and I was like, oh, I was all bummed out then. Thinking about the possibilities.
Yeah, Loose Balls on Amazon.com. It's like $10, the paperback, and it's a good read.
Very entertaining.
All right, Johnny, we'll talk to you later. Best
Excellent.
Of luck with the terrible Yankee season.
I
Thank hope you finish 500 or lower.
Thank you very much. We'll see you in April of 2009.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Later.
Target to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.